This is ESPN Crick Info.
A 32-team competition, a World Cup that is a celebration of the global game. Nations ranked as low as 70, beating higher-ranked nations on the biggest stage. And as if all this wasn't enough, a World Cup that's set to expand to 48 teams from 2026. Amid calls against overexpansion and dilution of quality. Such problems of plenty that are unfamiliar to us on Talking T20, ESPN Crick Info's podcast on the game that's reshaping cricket. Welcome to another episode then, and as the FIFA World Cup 2018 gathers breakneck pace, we turn our attention to a question a lot of us have been having over the past few weeks. Will cricket ever get to that level of expansion, and whether the T20 game is its ticket to becoming a truly global sport? It's my pleasure again to welcome back Jared Kimber, one of the directors of the cricket documentary Death of a Gentleman. He wears many hats, of course, and is ESPN Crick Info's global writer. And I think he's among those best placed to talk about cricket's globalization and expansion. How are you doing, Jared?
Very good, Shanel.
Sorry about the long intro, and that's the Talking T20 debut for Tim Wigmore, author of Second 11, the story of associate cricket across its many outposts, and a freelance journalist who possibly writes more on the subject more than anybody else going around. Great to have you, Tim.
Cheers, thanks for having me.
Let's start with you then, Tim. Just as all this is happening in the Football World Cup, cricket showpiece 50-over World Cup has shrunk to 10 teams, and while the World T20 will effectively still have 12 teams, that's still just over 10% of all nations with sanctioned cricket associations. How did we get here?
Yeah, it's a bit embarrassing for cricket, isn't it? You know, it's stated ambition from the ICC is to become the world's favourite sport, and it has a World Cup with fewer teams than Kabaddi, which is pretty embarrassing. And really, the answer of how we got here is the executive board of the ICC, so not the ICC itself, but the full members making those decisions, England, India especially. England, I know, have been really, really committed to World Cup being cut to 10 teams. And despite, you know, the improvement of associates, it hasn't really counted for anything. You know, ICC, there's a report after the World Cup last time. They said associates have been more popular than ever and also have performed better on the field. But, of course, the decision was made before then. It was first made in 2010, and they've stuck with it all the time. For all that you can kind of have a go at FIFA, I think expanding a World Cup for greed is a hell of a lot better than reducing a World Cup for greed.
Yeah, absolutely. Jared, FIFA has got around, I think, 210, 211 member associations, and 32 of them are already at the World Cup. If it goes up to 48, that's more than 20% of all nations at a World Cup. That sounds more like a World Cup, doesn't it?
It sounds like the world's been invited, doesn't it? And cricket doesn't work that way, and it's never worked that way. I mean, we could talk about the administration of recent times, but this is a historic thing. You had to be invited to play Test cricket. And we know that teams like America and Argentina and Ireland all played cricket. Scotland's another one. All played cricket to a very good quality at times, and they weren't given the magic invite. And we're still doing that. We now just pretend it's about quality and it's about, real cricket nations, which is, Afghanistan have proved is complete nonsense. Ireland have proved to a certain extent is complete nonsense. If you give teams opportunities, they will get better. And as Tim said, associate cricket has never been better than it is now. The standard of cricket around the world is growing. And at the same time, the tournaments, unfortunately, are shrinking.
What Jared says there, it sort of reminds me of what they used to say in FIFA. So in FIFA, until 1978, World Cup, it was 16 teams and only three from outside Europe and South America. And basically, there used to be a playoff between the winners of Africa and the winners of Asia. So the old president of FIFA, an old English guy called Stanley Rouse, he basically said, Africa and Asia aren't good enough. They deserve one place between them, not even a single place each. And that sort of mentality, which FIFA has gotten rid of, which is why football is not only the most popular sport in the world, it's actually becoming more popular compared to other sports. Unfortunately, that sort of attitude of old boys club there that Jared talked about, that's still pervading cricket, and it's why we have all the nonsense of World Cup being 10 teams, the T20, the so-called globalization flagship only really being 12, which is still absolutely pathetic.
Yeah, and Jared actually spoke about the magic ticket being given to certain teams, and the Test cricket over the years being an exclusive old boys club, like you rightly pointed out. But right now, T20 has now become as democratized as it's ever been. All 104 nations which are part of the ICC have now been given T20 status. But does this actually mean anything? Are these guys going to get any more fixtures? Do the ICC actually see T20 as an expansion vehicle around the globe?
Yeah, the ICC definitely do see it as the globalization vehicle, the expansion vehicle. But the problem is kind of what we've been talking about, what constitutes sort of expansionism in cricket. It's so tepid compared to other sports because there's this sort of, what's going to happen if we give, you know, status? What about the records? Will someone think of the statistician somewhere? There's all this nonsense, which is, it's so ingrained in cricket.
And what happened to Stats Guru?
But like the top goal scorer in international football, it's, you know, guy from Iran. And like no one cares that it's insulting Pele or Ronaldo or whatever, you know. People just deal with that and it's fine. And, you know, the earth still turns. Everything's okay. But cricket, is, because of how it's always been run, like this sort of very elitist old boys club, these attitudes go so, so ingrained. And then you compare it to something like basketball as well. So in 2003, basketball's World Cup was 16. Cricket's World Cup was 14. So it's okay. These two sports, both I'd say they're number two in the world. So the difference of two. By next year, the difference will be 22 nations. Basketball's doubled to 16, and cricket's gone back down to 10. And it is just crazy. And I do sometimes talk to administrators in other sports, and they're kind of laughing at cricket, to be honest.
Well, no, I mean, you know, what Wigmore said is very true. People do in other sports certainly laugh at cricket quite a bit. And you know, it's an interesting thing. I think I can say this, being that I work for Crick Info and do a lot of stats. It's complete nonsense that we can't work out different stats. No one is sitting around in cricket at the moment saying George Lohman is the best test bowler of all time because he's got the lowest bowling average. We understand that there is context in all these sorts of different things. And it's the same with Ryan Tendulkar's got one of the best records in ODI cricket. No one's saying that Ryan Tendulkar is a better batsman than Sachin Tendulkar or AB de Villiers. People hide behind things like that. And they also hide behind the quality of cricket. And, you know, I mean, realistically, when it comes down to it, you know, in 1975 at the World Cup, we had East Africa and we had Sri Lanka, both of which were real, real associate teams. One of those teams went on to win the World Cup 21 years later. And another team, you know, the sort of the remnants of East African cricket through Kenya, made a semi-final in 2003. We know what happens when you get exposure and you play more cricket and you get more money and you get more sponsors. You know, sport's quite simple on that level. If people are inspired to play it, there's money around the game and there's opportunity and experience, people get better. So it's all very well to give everyone T20 status, which is a great move, I think, from the ICC. But realistically, if you know, teams who are ranked 12th, 13th, 14th still never play teams who are ranked 8th, 9th and 10th, they're not going to get that much better. And that's realistically the way that cricket needs to start thinking of them. And the other thing about T20 cricket internationals that no one will say out loud, but they're a joke. You know, Australia doesn't care where they're ranked most of the time. Most teams don't care where they're ranked. They care how they go in the World T20. But realistically, T20 internationals are kind of seen as a joke quite often. I mean, Australia was playing a T20 international not that long ago with what was almost a C team. You know, down in a regional part of Australia, while the rest of their squad was getting ready for another tour on a different continent. So, you know, it's a good move by the ICC, but let's not pretend it's going to fix anything.
It's a good move, but it says everything about cricket. They're doing what literally every other sport has always done, which is saying everyone who plays internationals is an international and you go on a rankings table. That counts as progressive. That's what every other sport has always done. So this is just cricket getting to where it should have been 50, 60 years ago. It's, you know, by cricket standards, it's a big progress. But we need to remember cricket is still so far behind in its attitudes. And it's just approach to expanding what is a fantastic sport. It's a big progress. But we need to remember cricket is still so far behind in its attitudes. And it's just approach to expanding what is a fantastic sport.
If it's taken so long for cricket to embrace the fact that there needs to be no status for certain formats and give a democratic 104 teams T20 status today, the league market in T20s is expanding on its own. I mean, the ICC might, for all they want, give all nations T20 status. But T20 leagues are expanding around the globe. Tim, one great example which we were talking about is what's happening in Canada. Canada now has its own T20 league, and I believe they've taken a lease for 25 years from Cricket Canada to host this tournament. They've got some great stars, and there's going to be a lot of local talent playing with them. Do you think the ICC themselves know that the leagues are the faster vehicles to expand the game around the globe, apart from the usual suspects, which are 10, 12 nations playing all the time?
So I think like what other sports tells us is games expand both through their domestic leagues and through international tournaments. And you don't really want to have one, you want to have both. But the leagues are very interesting, and you could say, you know, more people know about Sandeep around the world, to be honest, because of the IPL than anything he's ever done playing for Nepal. So you have this interesting situation where arguably the IPL is almost doing as much for cricket globalization as almost anyone else.
Yeah, and if you look at...
Unless your passport is Pakistani, when you obviously you can't play. Apart from that, it doesn't care about your passport, only your talent, which is an attribute that cricket has really never had, certainly in international cricket. So you could see it becoming something like the NBA. The NBA, I think, is like 42 different countries are represented in that. And, you know, cricket is a long, long way away from that. But I just think there's a chance that leagues could develop really quite sophisticated scouting networks and so on in other countries, and actually to help to ensure that if the new Sachin Tendulkar is, you know, he's born in Bhutan or wherever, he can actually get the same opportunities as he would if he was born in India.
Yeah, some good examples would be Rashid Khan from Afghanistan getting to play in T20 leagues from around the world. Tim, you also spoke about Sandeep Lamichhane from Nepal, who played in the IPL this season thanks to a scouting network which you spoke about. Delhi Daredevils scouting him from Nepal and having him play in the IPL. Jared, do you see these as outliers, or do you see more talent from these smaller outposts continuing to play in larger T20 leagues and therefore becoming greater names in the sport?
Oh, no, it'll continue to happen. Whether it's the Canada League or probably someone else will come up with a league where there'll be no restrictions on local players that will have enough money to get the best players in the world, that's when we'll really start to see a big league. Because obviously the IPL is really good, but there's only so, you know, you can only have, what is it, 8 or 10 internationals on your books at any one time in the IPL. So realistically, you know, a league where you can have 16 players and they are just the best players in the world that is properly funded, and that is a secure league, could be the sort of future to grow the game. And it was funny, I talked to a guy called Neil Maxwell, who played for New South Wales. I think he might have played for Fiji as well, many, many years ago, and he's now a player agent. I think he was involved with the IPL when it was first set up as well. And he was saying to me, and this must have been almost 10 years ago now, he was saying to me, I don't understand. Like, if I'm the GM of a sporting team, I want to have the ability for everyone in the world to play cricket so I can find the next big thing and I can find the next big talent. At the moment in cricket, whether it be, you know, with IPL, the Blast, the CPL and all these different leagues, and this was even early on before this was a big deal, but there's all this overlap between all these different players at the moment. And so the same player goes from league to, you know, you look at someone like Mitchell McClenahan, he goes from league to league to league. There's actually, there are probably leagues that he'd be really good in and leagues that he won't be really good in. And so what you want is as many different players as possible to pick from. So from a T20 standpoint, from a tactical standpoint, you're far better off with more and more players coming up. And there's no one who really doesn't believe that.
Tim, it's all good talking about expansion in markets like Canada and places where cricket's not really penetrated over the years. But is there financial viability here? You've spoken so much about how most T20 leagues don't make money, most teams are not profitable. Is there enough there to sustain all these leagues from around the world? Because at the end of the day, the balance sheet is what matters, the bottom line is what matters, and are too many countries simply too poor to think of expansion in cricket?
No, I think so. There's sort of two different issues here. So I think the number one is that, look at South Africa, for example. They were not just trying to create a good league. They were trying to create a second IPL, essentially. And the market in South Africa was not big enough to sustain that. The, you know, the economics just didn't add up. I think there's a very finite amount of what you might call kind of super elite leagues with really, really incredible overseas players earning, you know, huge amounts that can compete financially with the IPL, because cricket's ecosystem is not big enough for that. But the difference is that there is, I think, a very big market for smaller leagues. So, I mean, New Zealand or Afghanistan, their economics will be favourable of their leagues, but they're not trying to do what South Africa are doing. They're not trying to do what Bangladesh are doing, or let alone what the IPL are doing. They are kind of content to make their own smaller league. So I think, again, you look at other sports and they have tons and tons of leagues, but they have, you know, Europe, you know, football, we have a big five leagues in Europe and other leagues all kind of fit around that. And I think we might see that in cricket a bit more, but I do think it's very dangerous of people to just think, oh, we're going to make a new league in Malaysia or Singapore and we want to target the Indian market and we're going to make a huge amount. We'll be second biggest in the world after the IPL. And that is very, very dangerous. That's fool's gold and a way to lose a lot of money, as South Africa proved. But I think there is money to be made from sort of starting more locally and kind of having more realistic aspirations and just being more realistic about where you fit into the wider ecosystem.
Jared, I keep thinking about this. About 5-6 years ago, even 3-4 years ago, we had a Champions League, which pitted the best of the best from amongst these T20 leagues. Today, we have so many more leagues, but there's no such incentive for all these sides to qualify and play in a tournament which decides the best T20 league team from around the world. Was that an idea ahead of its time? And do you see that coming back as these leagues mushroom from around all across the world?
Yeah, I mean, there's some major problems with that particular league. At that stage, domestic T20 leagues just weren't as prominent as they are now. So, you know, you had that Bush Rangers or the Redbacks from Australia playing, or you had the Cape Cobras playing. It's not quite going to be the same as CPL team coming over or PSL or, you know, those sorts of leagues, which are, you know, far more advanced. But there are basic problems with the Champions League, which comes back to the difference between the Champions League in cricket and football, which is in football, you know, Messi doesn't qualify for four teams for the Champions League. Yeah. So there are proper cricket problems there. And also, I think they thought it was going to be something huge, whereas actually it was going to be something that should have grown over time. And I think they thought it was going to be a huge tournament from the start. And so they made a couple of mistakes there. But I think their overall thinking was right. And I think that maybe one day we'll have something like that. But it will have to be a fairly short and sharp tournament. And there are major concerns. I remember the Bush Rangers lost Cameron White and Dirk Nannis from the Champions League one year, and that was pretty much the difference between them winning and losing. And I'm not sure how you get around things like that, whether we have substitutes or whatever sort of a system there. But I feel like the idea of a Champions League, and I think perhaps as T20 competitions get more and more older and wiser, and you know the teams get more part of cricket lexicon, that, you know, there will be, people might follow that. But yeah, when it started, it probably just started too early, as much as anything. And there was certainly, from a business point of view, I think they misunderstood how much people were going to care about it from day one. It's something that is a prestigious thing that would have had to have grown slowly. And that wasn't given that sort of time. And as I said, I don't think the leagues were ready either.
Yeah, no, I think the Champions League at its heart is a fantastic concept. So, so simple. But where it failed, it, you know, people didn't know about the teams in New Zealand or Australia or whatever very well in India. So viewing figures were pretty poor for not matches that didn't involve IPL teams. And then it also had this, Jared says, the kind of, you know, Kieran Parr's eligible for everyone problem. So potentially, you know, the ICC, there's always sort of talk or something, but we know that they want to, reduce the number of leagues that a player can play for, they want to reduce the number of leagues that a player can play in over the course of a calendar year. I mean, who knows if that will ever pass? But if something like that did happen and you were only eligible for, say, your home league and an IPL, or say one overseas one, so IPL or PSL or whatever, then something like Champions League could come in and have integrity. And, you know, seeing Trinidad v. Notts, that would be a really fun, interesting match, and just get some kind of different sort of match-ups that we don't see a huge amount. So, yeah, I'd love the Champions League to come back, but it has to be done in a proper way, and rather than kind of the decks were rigged really in favour of the IPL teams. I remember when Mumbai once had they were already allowed four overseas players, and they had a few Indian players being injured, and they were allowed a fifth overseas player, and the quote was to protect the integrity of the competition, and that was just a complete farce.
Yeah, that keeps happening because your player pool is that much smaller in cricket compared to other global sports. The other angle that we keep harping on about is all these sports that we compare cricket to. You spoke about basketball, Tim. I think rugby is another sport that keeps coming up. The problem is that cricket, unlike all of them, is not part of the Olympic Games. And in certain markets, I'm thinking specifically a big market like China or a USA, does this hinder funding and development from national sporting bodies, irrespective of where T20 is going, irrespective of what the ICC is doing. Jared, do you think cricket being in the Olympics will improve its state as a global game more than any other move could?
Yes, and in about 100 different ways. For instance, the ICC still don't run disability cricket. Yeah, disability cricket still left out on its own. I don't think that would be able to be continued once cricket got into the Olympics, because it all would also be in the Paralympics. You've then got other formats of that as well. Women's cricket would develop very quickly, I think, if it was in the women's cricket, if it was in the Olympics. I think you get a lot of people from Australia, England and India being like, oh, we don't need another tournament. They forget that, you know, for Ireland, having extra funding from the government for their women's team would be incredible. It would completely change the way that Irish women's cricket was developing, and that would be the case right across the world. I mean, there are so many places, Argentina and Japan are two really interesting examples where there's no reason why cricket couldn't take off. Cricket was already quite popular once in Argentina, and it dropped off completely after World War II and hasn't gone back. Japan is a country that is obsessed with baseball, and all due respect to baseball fans out there, I always think of it as 2D cricket in many different ways, you know, and even T20 cricket I find slightly more, you know, certainly more interesting when it comes to stuff like that. So realistically, there's no reason why the Olympics couldn't be something that could help grow cricket everywhere in so many different ways, in ways that we haven't even imagined yet. And yeah, obviously the dream is always China and the US and probably Russia and Brazil, because they're the huge economies that could come in and really change cricket. But realistically, you know, countries like Japan and Argentina who have the money and all the structure, the existing structures there that could play these sports, I just think it would be a huge step up for them.
Yeah, no, I know in rugby, because they re-entered the Olympics in 2016 after a 90-year gap, and they were, you know, they had big expectations, and the Olympics has vaulted all those expectations. It's been far better than they could ever have realised. They think they've got something like $25 million in extra funding from government, i.e. basically free money for their sports over each four-year cycle now, purely because of the Olympics. Most interesting is that their women's participation has gone up 10 times since they joined. They joined in 2009, they were elected to join from 2016, and so since 2009, their women's participation has gone up 10 times, and that's because Olympic funding in most countries is 50-50 for men and women. So you're looking at cricket as a whole, probably only 1 or 2% of its total funding genuinely goes to women's cricket. So for women's cricket, it would be phenomenal, but for the game all over the world, even countries like the Netherlands and so on, it really would be transformative. It's a no-brainer if you're not completely governed by, you know, Australia, England, India. For those three countries, not huge benefits, but for the other 101 members, massive benefits.
But Tim, a couple of questions there. One thing that you've written about extensively is the fact that all these associates in smaller nations, which are competing so much better today than they've ever before in the game, all of them are looking at the ODI World Cup as a more prestigious thing, something that is far more lucrative for them than just being considered as T20 specialists. Is that something where there's a dissonance between the ICC and the smaller nations? And the second question is the fact that, for example, getting into the Olympics, cricket's never had a better chance at getting into a multi-sport games like the Olympics with the format like T20. I mean, it's probably cricket's best chance at doing it with a three-hour game, which is suited to the rigors of a 15-day global competition like the Olympics. How do you see these two things coming together in the coming years?
Yeah, as you said, a multi-sport games, that's absolutely right, and it's the women's game is during the Commonwealth Games in 2022. It's down to, which even that is, you know, it's a positive step. It, you know, exposure, awareness, funding, and so on. There's, you know, all these huge benefits. But yeah, I think it's really important. You know, these countries, they're almost being told, you know, go and play T20. But actually, they want to play. I mean, most of them want to play Test cricket, but they do want to play. They want to play ODIs properly, and they want to play T20 as well. And obviously, they think the skills can complement each other. And also, there's more prestige of being in a World Cup, i.e. the ODI World Cup. There's more money, including from the ICC, but huge sponsorship opportunities and so on. And their players really want to, which is important, because we've seen with Ireland in the past, they kept on losing their players, you know. And that was to play Test cricket. Well, maybe in the future, if associates aren't allowed to play ODI cricket, their T20 teams will become worse because their best T20 players might qualify to play for someone else in ODI because they want to play ODI cricket in the World Cup there. So it can work in lots of different ways. But yeah, no, they do not want to just be T20 nations. The top 20 or so associates, they really want to play in ODI cricket as well and be good at that. And they think they've shown real progress. I think everyone would agree about that.
Jared, I have a question for you based on something I was looking at. I was looking at how many of these 32 teams at the FIFA World Cup actually have a cricket association and then by extension have T20 status. To my surprise, it was closer to about 70-75% of these countries at the FIFA World Cup from around the world now have T20 status. The question I'm going to pose to you is a hypothetical one. If you wear an ICC suit, if somebody who's in charge of running the game, if there's one thing that you think will make a transformative change in the way the game expands from around the globe, what would your step be? You can take a little bit of time, but this is something that there's one thing that you need to do. What would you do?
Oh, look, if I was talking to the ICC, which I never would, obviously, and I apologize to the ICC for ever mentioning that, but if I was working for the ICC, the first thing I would do would be the Olympics because of the amount of extra government funding that comes in, the amount of extra eyeballs from countries that don't necessarily normally play cricket, as we've already talked about. I think disability cricket and women's cricket are so far behind in the cricket world that seems to be the one thing that I would be going after the most, I think. I've tried to always felt that way, but the more I learn about cricket and the more I learn about sports in general, it just seems an absolute no-brainer to do that. And I understand that, you know, Australia, England, India don't have a lot to gain from that. But realistically, I think cricket has a lot to gain from it. We wouldn't have an Australia, England, India cricket team if it wasn't for cricket. So sometimes you have to bite the bullet and do what's best for the sport. And the Olympics is definitely what's best for the sport. And I also don't think it's that hard. You have one World T20 every 4 years, which is what the ICC up until recently were planning on having. And you have the other, the Olympics every 4 years as well. So you have two major T20 tournaments, one of which is a World Championship and it's amongst cricket. And the other one, which is a completely global Olympic event, which would take precedence over the World Championship in that format of T20. So to me, it does what the Olympics want. It makes the Olympics more important than the World Championship sport. We still have our own sport to make a little bit of money with and to tinker with on the side. And yeah, that's what I would be doing.
Tim, same question right at you. What among the various things that we've discussed, leave aside the Olympics, since Jared's taken that, what among the other various things we've discussed would you do to get cricket right up there and closer to basketball in terms of the number of teams playing the game globally?
Yeah, he's nipped my best point. So beyond the Olympics, which is the single best thing that could be done, it would just be making the World Cups genuinely inclusive events. You know, the World T20 should be at least 16 bare minimum teams in its main event, as opposed to they've just gone up to 12 now. The World Cup, again, should be at least 14, you know, probably at least 16. Because, A, obviously these are world events. You look at other sports, and they've grown so much. Countries, through being in the World Cup, you look at a country like Ireland, as William Porterfield said, if the World Cup had been 10 teams in 07, we'd never be a test nation now. So you have Olympics and World Cup, well, you have a chance to reach out beyond the normal people who follow cricket. You have a chance to sort of gain new exposure in countries where it's not that mainstream yet. You have a chance to essentially get new government funding, and you have a chance to inspire new kids to play the sport. You know, as Callum McLeod said recently, you know, he was inspired to play for Scotland by seeing them play in World Cup in 99. He just played amazing innings to beat England, but obviously there'll be no kids inspired by Callum McLeod in the World Cup next summer because the World Cup's being cut. So yeah, Olympics and increasing the size of World Cups would be two absolute no-brainers and would actually ultimately mean more money for Australia, England, India, because if you're serious about kind of actually trying to maximise revenue as a business in the long, you're not looking at the next 3 or 4 years, you're looking in the long term. And actually, for those countries, if cricket was bigger around the world, of course that would mean more money for them as well, because it would mean the total ICC broadcasting rights would be worth more. So it's actually in their own self-interest as well. But what they've done, they've prioritised so much short-term over medium-term and long-term. They've done that basically forever.
It's kind of a self-fulfilling cycle that you talk about, and it's interesting you mentioned 16 teams, because officially the World T20 is still 16 teams, but the last six kind of go through a qualifier, and then it kind of keeps shrinking from there on. So A full World Cup, 16 teams, more games for the smaller teams would probably be a great start, as Tim mentions. So before we just conclude, the ICC have just put out a few numbers comparing how cricket stands around the world. Tim initially mentioned that their goal is to make cricket the favorite sport in the world. They've said that there are more than 1 billion fans that cricket has from around the world, 34 or 35% of them being women fans. And T20 is officially now the most popular format of the sport. Among 300 million people they've surveyed, about 92% have said that T20 is by far their favorite sport. On that note, thanks a lot to two of the finest minds in cricket who go around thinking about the expansion of the game. Jared Zim even made a movie about it. We should go catch it on Netflix. Tim, of course, keeps writing on Cricinfo and other publications about how associate cricket needs a lot more opportunity. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining us all the way on Talking T20. And thanks to you, listener, for listening to our latest episode. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, wherever else you get your podcasts, and leave us your feedback. Thanks very much for joining, and hope to join you next time. Thank you.
This is ESPN Crick Info.